Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, someone I'm looking forward to speaking to again, because our last show was really, it was rip-roaring and it was no holds barred. It was the truth about healthcare. And prior to our coming on the show today, we had a really good conversation about the state of our healthcare system. And I think that's something that as physicians, we don't let on to our patients because we're just doing what we need to do every day to take care of them. But I think, Dr. LaGuardia, I'm sure you'll expound on this. We're in the trenches and we're working against everything. And it's taking energy to shield our patients from this healthcare system that doesn't seem to be about healthcare anymore. So today we're going to speak again to Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. He spent over 3 decades researching alternative ways of treating and preventing diseases of all types. And he's been in private practice in Connecticut for more than 30 of those years. During that time, he's learned what alternative and natural methods work and which ones are snake oil. He has written multiple books, and his most recent one is Infected, Secrets from the Medical Underground. And he has a Substack page where he writes, it's medicalunderground@substack.com. And Dr. LaGuardia, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because I feel like you and I are kindred spirits.
Yes. Yes, we are. We're a dying breed.
We are, but we're out there fighting, punching every day.
That's right.
To take care of our patients. And first of all, thank you for joining me, because I know you spend, your time is precious and you spend a lot of time, as I do, caring for patients. And today's discussion is going to be about our seniors, about, how do we keep, as we age, how do we stay independently, mentally well and physically well? Because I don't think the healthcare system is designed, honestly, for people to be independent and out of a doctor's office and off of a medication if possible.
Yeah, right. True. It's the healthcare system, unfortunately, is misnamed. It's not really a healthcare system. It's kind of like a patching of problems. It's always been my contention. I really practice functional medicine that if they would just get to the roots of things, they would solve a lot of the problems, but they come in and unfortunately most of our colleagues aren't proactive as to preventative measures. They only treat problems as they pop up, when it's, as you know, it's so much more effective to be proactive and prevent things from happening rather than have to treat them afterwards. There's so many positive ramifications for you as you move forward and you age, especially.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It seems to be it's designed to give you as many medications as you can take daily just to manage the symptom. But the whole system just seems to be off to me. We spend a lot of time on creating medications to treat the problem, right? Whether that's cancer, whether that's whatever, autoimmune disease, et cetera. I have yet to see the same energy placed on prevention. And if we were, as a functional medicine physician, is it just as simple as watching what you put in your mouth, watching what you think, watching where you go to get your information, whether that's, socially? Is it just that simple of making sure that we are really much more mindful of what we're putting into our system? And that would that be the first way that we could stop this ball from rolling downhill?
Yeah, well, that's why I try to teach my patients. I feel like I'm not just a physician. I'm there as a teacher and a guide for them. As a lot of patients are resistant to things you tell them. And I tell them, look, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to advise you what to do. You're a big boy or a big girl. You do what you want. But this is what I think you should do. And, I try not to browbeat them into it, but rationally explain to them that the benefit of having that Substack page that I wrote, 50 or 60 articles so far, and I do one every week on different things, fever, hydration, sleep. I'm doing one on anti-aging medicine now. And so I refer them to that, and it saves me a lot of work just having to read through it, because I write it in layman's terms that they can understand. I don't speak down to them. I speak across to them and answer their questions and stuff. But as you said in your opening, that you can get so much benefit out of just simple interventions. Sleep. A good night's sleep, lowers your risk of heart attack, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, sudden death, all kinds of problems. And, you know, it's underrated because we're in a society where we're moving along, you know, a 24/7 clip. The news cycle never ends. You know, there's always stuff going on. We're bombarded constantly by information overload. You know, just, you know, hearing things, seeing things, watching things. I look at these young patients, I'm always amazed they have headphones on constantly. I mean, I like silence. I don't want things pumped into my head all day long. And I try to tell people, you have to unplug. You know, it's not good for you to be that close to electronics. Even tell them when you're sleeping, don't have something charging next to your bed. That's a really bad move. You know, electronic fields from that, electromagnetic fields that you don't want to be exposed to all day. So charge the phone in another room. Keep, when you sleep, make sure the room is completely dark. No light. That helps you melatonin production. It helps you get into a stage 4 deep sleep. And it aids that. Have no noise if you can. I don't even have electric alarm clock. I have wind up or a battery driven alarm clock next to my bed. I want none of that. But a nice, quiet, comfortable bed where you could sleep well goes so far in helping so many different problems. So that's why I call it low hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Some things you could take care of. Because as you know, we're in, besides the information overload and the bombardment of electronic stuff and stimuli all day, there's a toxic overload. We're in this environment. It's just a pool of toxins. I mean, the foods are void of minerals and trace elements and vitamins. I mean, study after study shows you have to eat like 20 apples compared to the apples you had in the 1980s compared to now in all these different fruits and foods, because they keep farming the soils with the same chemicals and depleting them on and on without building up the soil, where all your health begins in the soil. So I try to, and I mention it in my books, and I try to tell patients as well, if you can grow your own food, not everyone can or has a desire to, but if you can, or at least buy food that's organic if you can afford it, and shop along the outside of the grocery store. Those outer aisles are where you want to be. You don't want to be on the inside with a lot of processed food. That's just, that toxic load that you take in from those foods. You have to pay a metabolic price for that. Your liver has to break it down. You have to excrete it from your body or store it in fat. You know, there's not ways to, you know, our bodies aren't equipped to get rid of these thousands of toxic chemicals that we're exposed to. And so consequently, that's a burden on yourself. And that too leads to aging and stuff and leads to problems with your health. So there's all these things you have to address. Small things, hydration. Hydration is key to good health because all your body has only certain ways to get rid of toxins. And one of the ways is to dissolve them and excrete them from your kidneys. And so if you don't have enough water to do that, your body can't deliver it to the kidneys, or if it delivers it and it's too concentrated, you're damaging the kidneys as you go. And so those are the little things you could do right off the bat, and try to limit your intake.
You know what strikes me, what you said, especially about the phone, these don't cost anything. This is just a change in habit. And it seems like the whole society is based on what's easy, not what's good.
Right. They want a quick fix. They want you to give me a pill. They'll make me young.
But I think people need to understand aging is not, you know, the statement of anti-aging is against people, right? You're not anti getting older. That means you're no longer on the earth if you really want to take it to its logical extreme. But getting older doesn't mean you have to feel bad, right? So we're equating, and I think the whole society is, if as you hit certain milestones in terms of getting older, then you're supposed to have breakdowns and you're supposed to not be able to be active mentally or physically.
Yeah, that's not true.
No, we need to change that paradigm, don't we?
Right. Well, there's some sobering facts. If after the age of 30, every 8 years, you double your risk of dying. So, so by the time you reach 70, you've got 32 times greater chance of dying than you did when you were 30 of that, over the next 8 year period. And yeah, it's sobering stuff, but you're right. You're absolutely right. It doesn't have to be that way. Not all societies are like that. If you look at people in the Hunzas, for example, in Pakistan and the Himalayas, they've studied them since the 1940s. They live in a rural, agrarian type of environment, but where they are is in the foothills of the Himalayas. So what's coming down out of those foothills is water that is so heavily laden with minerals and trace elements that these people are vigorously healthy. They have a low stress lifestyle. There's no noise. There's no air pollution. There's no water pollution. They have, and one of the greatest things is they have strong family units. You know, one of the problems with our society is that loneliness is epidemic. People are lonely. They're isolated. The family unit's breaking down. They're not religious and not turning to church, and they're more and more isolated on their computers and their houses. I can't tell you how many young men I have in my practice who just amaze me. They're in their late 20s, early 30s. They're not working, or if they are working, they just come home and go. They live in their parents' basement. They go right downstairs. They go on their computer. They'd rather watch porn than have a girlfriend. They have no, half of them don't even have a driver's license. They have like no motivation to do anything. I'm thinking, you're not living your life. You're watching other people. You know, they watch these reality shows. I mean, how boring is that? You know, and it just amazes me. I never, you know, when we were young, things were totally different. I mean, oh, yeah. I couldn't wait to get my driver's license the first day. I wanted to move out. I wanted to be independent. You know, I wanted to date. I wanted to have fun. You know, their lives are really shallow and, you know, without, you know, what is a greater feeling than going out to families or gathering or with your friends and having belly laughs and just telling stories and just, you know, engaging with other humans. That's what it is to be human, to love and to interact with people and to interact with God and to have, you know, and have faith in something other than the government. And they're lacking all of this and they're suffering because of it. Huge rates of depression. I mean, I never saw a generation like this. The same age group, they're all on ADD meds, anxiety, depression, panic attacks, bipolar disorder, not to mention the bizarre sexual things that, you know, the deviations that they have that are just mind-boggling. I mean, when we were young, I remember Christine Jorgensen?
Yes.
Right. There was one transgender woman in the world. You know, she was famous from Scandinavia. She would come around. Now, 3% of high school kids are undergoing sex changes. 3%.
That's a lot.
Something's wrong. You can't tell me. And if you mention it, you know, you're a homophobe. I'm not against. You know, you're an adult. Do what you want. I'm just saying that something demographically, something is going on that society is changing that much that many people are undergoing sex changes. You know, it's something unusual is going on, you know, and I don't know if it's a consequence of electronic exposure, EMF fields. I know a lot of the boys were exposed to heavy duty soy and stuff, soy boys, they call them, when they were young, instead of regular milk, which is full of estrogens. And there's estrogens in all the plastics, as you know. And so they're, you know, and then so the fetus, as it's developing, is soaked in estrogens. It's an abnormal environment for a male fetus. Even the females are undergoing their periods earlier, breast development, eight years old and 9 years old. You know, the boys are infertile. You know, it's a complete disaster from a societal point of view. But, you know, they're a protected group, and so you can't really, and like I said, I'm not criticizing them. I'm observing it as a scientist and thinking to myself, if these were lab animals, I would be panicking.
Well, if you have a generation that is emotionally devastated, right? They can't really function by themselves without the help of the government. And there's no joy in this environment. What kind of people, what kind of society do you have when there's no empathy and there's no joy and there's no love in it? And right. Everybody's the biggest victim. That doesn't bode well for right. Society being able to maintain itself.
Right. It's, I mean, you know, being a man is looked down upon. Masculinity, you know, toxic masculinity. Why is that toxic? You know, it's not, you know, you're not beating your wife because you're a man. You know, you're just supporting yourself, supporting your family, you know, doing what you're supposed to do mm-hmm. as a responsible adult. But that somehow has been vilified. And, you know, I think all of that comes together in a very toxic soup. I know our discussion is about anti-aging. I'll get back to that. But it's, I think all of that interplays together.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, these children, these young adults are going to become seniors at some point. And what coping mechanisms will they have? I remember sitting with my mom and dad and just the skills that they learned as they were growing up, they passed it along to me. I'm not sure that people have skills that they can survive without help. And right. What happens when you don't have the help? You're not going to survive, right?
Right. The greatest quote I heard just recently, and I love it, is that hard times make hard men. Hard men make soft times. Soft times make soft men. Soft men make hard times. We have soft men right now, and there's hard times coming.
I think we have soft everybody, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, they say men, just that was the example, but you're right. But
and the women are under siege too. So there's this, nobody's good enough. Everybody's flawed, but there's certain people that are special and therefore they're better than you. And it doesn't make sense from any standpoint that people would acquiesce to me. If you know that you're not whatever is they're trying to call you, then you should stop just playing to it, because it stops. It's like being bullied. Once you stand up for yourself, it stops.
Right. Right. Exactly.
On that note, let's take our first break, because I think we've got a really good foundation on the changes that have come about, and they're so subtle, but they're becoming more prominent now. And so let's take our first break and come back. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. He's triple boarded in internal medicine and geriatrics and also in bariatrics. And it's like a perfect storm of patients who seem to have, you must be, as I said before, quite busy, because it's just this nexus of patients who are living in a society where the food's not healthy. It's changed their physiology, and it's becoming, I think, you know, the healthcare system is almost creating its patients, right?
Yes. So
it's like from time you put something in your mouth when you're a child, you're destined, if they want you to, if you do it the way they want, you're going to be in the healthcare system at some point. And, you know, we've gone through this whole pandemic situation. I wanted to revisit that loneliness aspect. I've never seen a society become so not only polarized, but distant. Mm. You know, people don't even shake hands anymore. And how do you socialize? And from a child standpoint, we were all in over each other when we were kids and, you know, middle school. And to have that gone, to be in at home, away from your friends, how does that affect you, do you think, socially and mentally? Is that feeding on this depression, anxiety? Did that supercharge it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, how could you go through life isolated in your basement playing video games and having very few friends, or the few friends you have are online? Not really. I mean, those, you know, those are online acquaintances. I wouldn't call them friends, you know. And you know, a friend to me is someone you can call at 4 a.m. and say, "Hey, Billy, I'm in trouble. I need this. Can you help me out?" You know, and knowing full well you would do the same thing for him, you know, and, you know, or, you know, something horrible happens, you know, your child dies, your parent dies, or something. Your friends step up and they come to you and they want to be with you, want to console you, want to, you know, they want to laugh with you and they want to cry with you if they're true friends. You know, they're not friends there just to play video games with you. And I think lacking that in your life would make it just so empty. I mean, you're more robotic than anything. And I think you're right. The consequence of that is epidemic, depression, anxiety. These kids can't deal with even the smallest things. They're, you know, we grew up, at least I grew up, I'll be 70 this year. I grew up, you know, we grew up, the people who raised us were World War II and Korean War vets. These were no-nonsense people. They were people that survived the Depression. There was no, you know, babying you about anything. You know, suck it up was my father's, you know, my parents' first thing, you know, deal with it. You know, there was no coddling you over anything, because they knew the world's not going to coddle you. You know, you have these kids and you raise them, everyone gets a trophy, everyone's a winner. Well, what's the point of competing if everyone's a winner?
Exactly.
That's not, you know, so the winners get the same feeling as the guy who didn't do anything. What are you going to do when you get out in the workforce? Tell your boss, I feel good about myself. I know I didn't get that job we wanted to get, but I feel good about myself. he's not going to be very impressed with that. And I think you're raising people to fail. You know, you got to toughen them up and have them deal with things. Plus, there is an epidemic lack of empathy. I mean, you see all these cases of people being assaulted on the subways and stuff, and everyone walking away, a woman getting raped or beat up, and you're not doing anything, and you're a man. I mean, I couldn't imagine not intervening, no matter how dangerous it was. You would just feel obligated as a human. You know, you can't see someone hurting someone else and not intervene. it's immoral, and I just weak, cowardly people. And I think it's good. Once again, it's good. These soft men are going to lead to very hard times for us.
Well, as you treat your young people and your seniors tells a lot about a society. And, you know, I don't think COVID was kind, honestly, to the seniors as well. The stories that we've heard about people in senior citizen homes not being able to touch their loved ones, people passing away, not being able to go to funerals, people pining literally for human contact with their family and loved ones and being denied. To me, that's absolutely, that's cruel.
And there was no reason for it. There was absolutely no reason for it. Everything they told us was a lie. Everything they told us about the vaccine, everything they told us about the COVID and stuff. I mean, I was treating COVID with high dose vitamin C, vitamin D, and giving nebulizer treatments with hydrogen peroxide and a little bit of betadine sometimes. I had phenomenal success. I mean, I was curing people left and right. I was taking people to the hospital, sent home, and we could do nothing for you and turn them around in 4 or 5 days. And of course, the powers that be, we'd think, would be interested in that. When I told them what I was doing, they were horrified. Just said, you can't do that. Why can't I? I said, you guys aren't, you're playing all offense and no defense. Why aren't you building up their immunity? Everyone knows that every respiratory illness is susceptible to vitamin D and vitamin C. There's none of them aren't. They all are. Including COVID, including flu, including pneumonia. But I really blew their minds. I told them I hadn't had a flu shot in 30 years. And you're in primary care. I said, I haven't had the flu either. I'm exposed to it all day, every day.
Their heads must have exploded when you said that.
Oh, my God. They went crazy. They actually threatened to tell the state medical society. I said, tell them what? that I'm healthy?
But that's the whole thing about this system that I think that we're in. It literally is a one-size-fits-all. There is this closing your eyes and putting your fingers in your ears to anybody who questions the system, but not only questions it, but actually performs in a way that's got better outcomes. I would want to know what that person is doing. I would want to have put this on, in a protocol. Or at the very least, leave the person alone and have alternate treatments. There's nothing wrong with having different things for different people, but this has been an education in a mercenary, really, a medical totalitarian system where if you didn't toe the line, you'd better keep your mouth closed or else.
Right.
We still haven't said anything about that as physicians, and patients don't even know.
I was actually shocked by our colleagues. Because you're old enough as am I to remember the days when in the doctor's lounge we would debate things.
Yep.
Lively debates, and no one was mad at you. And sometimes you were proven wrong. Sometimes they were proven wrong, and you walked away. And both of you learned something from it. But it was an exchange of ideas. That's what science is all about. And all of a sudden, now it's taboo. I'm thinking, why? Why is this taboo? Why if all viruses evolved to less lethal and more contagious, always? Because they want more market share. They don't want to kill you. They want to spread the virus. And I explained that to them. They said, oh, no, not this time. I said, why is this one different? And I was proven right. It's not different. Every variable has been more contagious and less lethal. And it's all of it. I mean, I said, look, I study virology. I'm a nerd. This is what I do. I don't see why this one is different. And no one can answer it. They just, basically told me to shut up, which, didn't go well with me.
No, I know that, and I love that about you. I mean, I have a master's in medical microbiology, so virology.
Right.
Yeah, and it didn't make any sense from the get-go. But now that we've gone a little bit past this, doesn't it really shock you that the rhetoric hasn't changed? It's still doubling down on you need another one, and nothing's changing. I mean, but you're living this. It's changed. People think it's an allergy now. That's how mild it is.
Right.
But the rhetoric is still...
Even more disturbing, the push to still vaccinate children.
Yeah.
When they were at no risk from the beginning. You had a group that wasn't affected by it at all. And we're forced into vaccination. Now we know all these children having cardiac problems, young adults having cardiac problems. The amount of infertility is off the wall. In fact, I was just reading a thing a few weeks ago. There was vaccinated women are looking for unvaccinated men's sperm. Because they're worried about, the genomic changes from the vaccine and the amount of infertility that they're having, and males too. you know, this toxic environment, microplastics showing up in everything, testes and ovaries and everywhere. I mean, we're in this, like I said, this toxic pool that's we're paying a price for.
Well, it's time for honesty, for it to have a conversation. Let the chips fall where they may, but I don't believe that we can continue the same pathway, because what you just described has a very bad endpoint. And you don't want to figure this out when it's absolutely too late. We shouldn't have. And oh, you know, the people of, I didn't know. that also is interesting when you get that. I was wrong, but I didn't know. I was fooled. I was baffled. I just don't get that either. Get a book.
Right. Well, you know, one of the most disturbing things is the pipeline from the FDA, for example, to the pharmaceutical companies. The same guys who reassured us that the vaccine was safe have million-dollar contracts with Moderna and Pfizer once they retire from the FDA. And that should be, you know, all that should be blocked. There's no way you should be able to regulate a company and then later on work for them. It just invites fraud. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people looking at their own self-interest rather than societal self-interest. So you have crazy things like the FDA still pushing vaccines when their own studies show that people vaccinated have worse outcomes than the unvaccinated. So why in God's name would you keep pushing them?
I think it's follow the money is the mantra.
Right.
I mean, the money threaded through the system was amazing. It was a huge amount of money from doctors in practice given payments for every patient that they injected. And practices literally making more money than they ever had during this system or this setup. And the hospitals with how many people could you intubate?
Right. You know,
and that was a very peculiar incentive, which wasn't about healthcare, honestly.
Right.
So, you know, from the standpoint of, and we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but from the standpoint of aging, and let's take our break because I don't want to stop thought. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia, and we're having an honest conversation about our health and our healthcare system. And prior to the break, I think we, you know, unroofed or uncovered some of the peculiar incentives that went on before the pandemic, during, and now after. I mean, from the standpoint of doctors and, more important, patients, because patients to me drive the system. We're advocates for our patients, and ultimately they really need to want more, don't you think? Instead of falling into, give me a pill, give me something to make me better, make my brain work better, make me younger. They really need to have more skin in the game in terms of being critical thinkers. Do you think that would help?
Yes. I mean, you know, what I try to do with my patients is I'm a teacher as well as a physician for them, and I guide them. But, you know, we get to aging, you know, people are concerned about, oh, I'm getting old, blah, blah. You know, I said, well, you know, like we spoke about earlier, I said, there's certain things you can do right away, low hanging fruit. Like I said, you know, good sleep, be outside, fresh air, get that sun every day, get out there, don't get burnt, but get early morning, late day sun if you're really fair skinned. You know, there's epidemic amounts of vitamin D deficiency. And as you know, vitamin D is more like a hormone than a vitamin. It's so useful for you. And ironically, all my patients of color have low vitamin D, and all my very fair skinned patients have it for a different reason. They're wearing sunblock and not going outside. My patients of color have natural sunblock built in. The darker they are, the worse their vitamin D levels. But more disturbing to me is all these, even the studies on vitamin D, they never mention it's fat soluble. They don't tell the patients, take it with fat. So what kind of study is that? It's random. I mean, the results are skewered because probably half the people are taking it wrong. And so I always teach patients about that. Fat soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, CoQ10 have to be taken with fat to absorb them. So I try to, you know, I try to tell them, and there's this fear of fats. I try to tell them fat's good. Fat's not bad. Fat doesn't make you fat. Carbs make you fat. There's no essential carbs for that reason. There's essential proteins, you know, and essential amino acids, which are proteins, and essential fatty acids, which are fats. And you can live quite healthily just on fats and protein because your body can make carbs from that, from gluconeogenesis, as you know. And so I tell them, look, fat is so important for you. You know, all these years we were told saturated fat is bad. Now they realize it's not bad. I mean, if you look at Weston Price was an interesting guy. He was a dentist in the 1930s and 40s. He traveled the world looking at people's diets because he was upset with how many Americans would come in with narrow faces and very, very crowded teeth and rotten teeth and all these health problems. And what he found when looking around the world was that diets high in saturated fats, traditional diets, were great for you. And they would find these natives on these islands in the Pacific. And he found the same thing all over the world, everywhere he went. Islands off the coast of Norway, islands in the Pacific, Africa, Asia. Everywhere he went where there were primitive societies, they had certain things in common. One of them was they all ate fermented foods of some type, which are great for you. There's your probiotic and releases all the minerals and trace elements in the foods. They were growing most of the foods themselves. They were not obviously not using chemicals on their farming, but they had a really high fat intake. And he called it factor X. He didn't know what it was. It turned out to be K2, vitamin K2. And so what happens is, you know, he realized that the problem was the diet. They still have the Weston Price Foundation still active today, it's excellent. They talk about diet and different things you can use. But what you realize was that a lot of these people were eating fresh fish. They were, you know, they were getting a fat. They were eating drinking whole milk. They were eating low fat yogurt, regular fat yogurt, and things like that that they made themselves. And their diets were full of saturated fats. They were good for them. Their jaws were square because they were chewing foods at a young age. And that mastication develops the facial muscles and facial structure. So they didn't have these weak chins and these crowded teeth and buck teeth. They had broad smiles. And you can see within the same family, they would move to a Western society or adopt a Western diet. And within a generation, they had all the problems of health that that Westerners have. And so, I mean, that's a really sobering thing to incorporate into yourself. So I try to tell patients, you have to be on, I try to put them on A, D, E, and K, or if they're taking a multivitamin, make sure at least they take it with fat. But, you know, I tell them to try to eat fermented foods, yogurt, sauerkraut, kimchi, if you like, stuff like that, mm-hmm. Kefir, you know, there's all these healthy things. And we're blessed because we have all this stuff now in our stores. It's not like the 1960s where the stuff wasn't available. We have an unbelievable amount of food available and good stuff, but people, you know, are lazy and eat processed garbage foods that are hollow. But if you want to stop aging, you incorporate all the antioxidants you can in your diet. Vitamin C is key. There's no toxic levels of vitamin C. You can't hurt yourself with it. The only side effect is diarrhea when it gets really high. But now there's stuff like NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, which wasn't available for a while, wasn't available, unfortunately, during COVID. And that forms glutathione, which is the master antioxidant for your body. Because we know that aging is a consequence of DNA damage and shortening of telomeres on the end of chromosomes. And so as you get, usually the cell can only reproduce about 50 times on average before it undergoes senescence and dies. And you can slow down the damage to the telomeres. That's why they stop reproducing. And you can prevent damage to the DNA, which causes aging, by doing certain things, not smoking. And you, if you think smoking doesn't age you, look at the face of a smoker. They look way older than non-smokers. Right off the bat, it ages your skin and makes you look older. And it has, you all day you're sucking in toxins. There's a price to pay for that. But you know, I tried telling me garlic and turmeric and things like that. Eat organic, colorful foods, bright red, green, orange foods. Those are great for you because they have antioxidants in them and they have a lot of bioflavonoids and polyphenols, all things that are great for your health. Olive oil, fabulous for you. Coconut oil, fabulous for you. You know, things like that. Tell them to take avocados for good fat. You know, fat's not bad. You know, citrus, nuts, you know, a Mediterranean diet, nuts, seeds, citrus, butter, milk, cream, wine. You know, a little alcohol is better for you than no alcohol. You know, the problem is where do you draw the line? But you know, a lot of people cross that line. But Doc, you said it was good for me.
Exactly. So a little is good, more is better.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, little things like dental health. You know, no one with bad teeth is in good health. No one. You're seeding your body. You see it in your practice, I'm sure. You know, people with rotten teeth are never in good health because they're seeding themselves all day with these toxins and microbacteria that are bad for them. And, you know, and I tell them floss, get those teeth fixed, you know, right away as soon as you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of teeth then, what about the people who do the dental implants or people who have the root canals?
Right.
are those nidus of dead tissue, infection,
yes,
or foreign body?
Yes. Yeah, you have to find, if you want to correct that, you have to find a biological dentist, you know, a functional dentist to do that. And they're few and far between. And insurance doesn't pay for it. And quite frankly, I mean, it's a horrible thing. I would not, I don't know, taking out all your fillings would be, I just can't imagine. I'm too weak for that. I draw the line there. I don't know. It's just too much for me. But
detox all the time to get that out, right?
Right, right. I might take that off my list, you know. But, you know, I have patients use, in my articles and Substack, I write a lot about this too, about, you know, protecting your skin. Vitamin C serum works great for it. Vitamin A works great for the retinol and triretinoin and things like that. But, you know, collagen is key. You know, we used to eat nose to tail on animals in other societies, you know, and consequently, they were getting tons of collagen. And that's great for you. I mean, your whole body is the major protein of your body. It's completely constructed of collagen. You know, and so now we eat skinless chicken. You know, all these boneless things. All, they used to not waste anything. The carcass would be thrown in, and you'd make some broth out of it. And that was bone broth was fabulous for you. It's just full of nutrients, full of minerals. You know, they didn't waste anything. And consequently, those are healthy habits to have. And other societies do it, but we don't. And we're paying a price for it as a society. We're sicker than everyone else on earth. We have the greatest medical care available to us, and still we're the sickest. You know, we have diabetes is exploding. You know, pediatricians would see one case of childhood diabetes in their career in the 1940s. Now it's an epidemic. One out of three kids are either pre-diabetic or diabetic. They're all morbidly obese, you know, so many of them. It breaks my heart to see these kids fat, you know, holding a soda in their hand, walking into my office with their parents. I'm like, what are you giving this kid this for? This is garbage. You know, and you know, they don't exercise at all. Gym is non-existent. We had real gym for an hour.
Yeah, we did too.
You know, jumping jacks, knee bends, push-ups, you know, climbing the ropes, playing dodgeball, and, you know, a lot less ADD. I mean, if you get those kids out there, you burn them up first hour of the day, make them run, they won't be bouncing off the walls the rest of the day as much.
Yes. You know, very true. And also getting out your frustrations with dodgeball always made you calm.
I absolutely love dodgeball.
That's one of my favorites too. We're really, you know, a lot alike, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, another thing I stress to people is downtime. I alluded to it earlier. Prayer. You don't have to be, you know, I'm not saying you have to be religious, but it certainly helps. You know, praying, I start my day every day in prayer. 10 minutes of prayer in the morning. You know, I sit in this comfortable chair and I just close my eyes and I thank God for everything I have. And I go through a prayer of, you know, 7 or 8 prayers I do as a routine. And it feels good. I start my day with that. I do a little exercise right after that, my push-ups, and then I start my day. But even at night, a lot of times I'll sit in this big cushiony chair in the dark, in silence. And sometimes I'll spend an hour or so there just thinking about things. And I'm telling you, it resets you. It calms you. It lowers your blood pressure. It lowers your pulse. It cuts off that constant flow of stress hormones, you know, cortisol and stuff pouring into your blood that leads to diabetes and ulcers and hypertension and all the degenerative chronic diseases we have. You know, we're doing this to ourselves. We don't have to. You don't have to go this way.
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, ultimately, it gets you to get out of your ego, doesn't it? It's like you're not the most important thing. We don't control a lot. You know, we think that we do. And I think that's maybe what gets us into, if I can't control it, then it's someone else's fault, or I'm the worst person in the world. This becomes magnified in a negative way, either inwardly or outwardly. And I think we're experiencing that as a society. If everybody lived with a different energy of gratitude,
right,
then you wouldn't have all this energy spent on war and pain and all the things that people do to each other. It's not worth it.
Right. You know, I mean, if you don't have, I find that the rate of depression of atheists in my practice is huge, you know, and a lot of times when people are dying, you know, or I know they're going to die soon and I know they're atheists and they go, oh, what am I going to do? And I always give them a short little speech, you know, about, well, listen, you know, sometimes it's good to reach out. You know, there's God waiting for you. you know, it's there. It's good stuff. Don't ignore it. You know, and I remember a guy a month ago, I said that to him. He just died yesterday. And he mocked me and said, "Doc, I don't believe with that asshole magician in the sky." I said, "Okay." You know, I just said my speech. I'm not there as a priest. I'm just there to advise you. You know, I said, you know, what a hollow life. And what he had was amazing. I went to his funeral, and because he was a longtime patient, I didn't usually go, but he actually was a landlord to my building. And he had on his funeral card, it was a picture of him in front of his Rolls Royce. He was very wealthy. And he had $100 ties on, tie made $100 bills, a fake tie. And on his little card that he gave out at the funeral, he said, "Nothing makes me happier than to go to my mailbox every day and pick up all those checks coming in." That was what he wanted for his legacy? Are you kidding me? Is that your life? Is that shallow and meaningless that all you care about up to your deathbed is your money? I mean, how sad is that?
It is. Very.
You know, it was mind-boggling to me. But people are like that. They have shallow, empty lives, and they pay a price for it.
Well, I think that's, you have to have purpose and meaning in your life. I think that gives it color. And I think that makes you able to share that. If you have nothing to share with somebody, kind of what's the point of being here?
Right.
On that note, let's take our last break, because I want to ask you about mental health and our this growth or explosion of things like dementia. So mm-hmm. Let's take our last break and come
okay,
back.
Okay, sure.
You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. Prior to the break, and by the way, people can go to your website. It's medicalunderground.substack.com.
No, at substack.com.
Oh, sorry, at substack.com. Apologies. And I'm on the site now. It's awesome. There's great articles of things, everything from how iodine is important, vitamin D, things that will help your body really recover, repair, and thrive. And, you know, there seems to be an increase in dementia, not only just mental health, but Alzheimer's dementia and function as we get older. Is it hype, or is this really, are you seeing this as an increase in your practice?
Oh, I see it. It's an epidemic. It's going back to younger and younger people. Interestingly enough, recent research shows that dementia is really what they call type 3 diabetes now. What it means is that you actually get insulin resistance in your brain. And so what happens is the glucose can't get into the cells, can't be driven into the cells because of the insulin resistance. And so consequently, the brain, which runs on glucose, doesn't have the energy it needs. And so what happens is initially, as this happens, it builds up abnormal proteins in the brain because it can't clear them as well because it doesn't have the energy to clear them. So it misfolds the proteins. Proteins are all folded in a certain way, as you know, and that folding is critical to their to their function. And when they're misfolded, a lot of times they can't work within the cell and they accumulate in there. And so you get these tau proteins and these beta amyloid proteins that build up inside the neurons in the brain. But eventually, as it gets more and more toxic inside the cell and there's less and less energy available to it, at first just a little bit of memory loss. But as it goes on and progresses, what happens is that as there's less and less function, the brain shuts down everything until finally all you could do is breathe and then you die. You stop eating, you stop talking. But there's good news because and I wrote articles on my Substack page, there is a backup system. The brain just doesn't run on glucose. It also runs on medium chain triglycerides. And so that backup system, if you initiate it early, I try to put patients on it early. There's a couple, I use a brand called Clean MCT. MCT is medium chain triglycerides. That's a brand, but you can also just get coconut oil. That's full of medium chain triglycerides. It takes several tablespoons of that a day. And so if you have patients that are developing moderate cognitive impairment, when they first get a little, you've seen them, you practice pleasantly befuddled, you know, they get, you know, a little forgetful and stuff. It is dramatic if you could do that early. So I put them on those. And I also, you know, the brain is mostly fish oil, kind of omega-3 kind of products there. And so I give them krill oil, which crosses the blood-brain barrier. nicely, better than fish oil. I give them a methylated B complex because of a lot of people have this MTHFR mutation where they can't process B vitamins. And so I give, but they can process methylated B vitamins. So I give them methylated ones, but also, and I think, you know, I'm starting to study this now and I'm working on it. All this problem with the young people and their problems, as it turns out, all of their mental problems, a lot of it is B vitamin deficiencies. They have epidemic lack of thiamine, for example. And thiamine is critical for brain processing and stuff, as are most of the B vitamins. And there is all B vitamins are water soluble, as vitamin C is. All other vitamins are fat soluble, but they actually have devised a fat soluble type of thiamine called benfotiamine. That so you have to take it with fat, but that's really good for brain function. So I give them krill oil, magnesium, methylated B complex, benfotiamine, and depending on coconut oil or usually coconut oil or clean MCT. I use that brand. And people are very happy with that because for years I've used the pharmaceutical drugs and I've stopped using them because they just don't work. They don't do anything. And I've tried, I don't know if in your practice, you don't see much of that, but in my practice, you know, I'm internal medicine and geriatrics. I see a ton of it and I run a nursing home. And so there's, you just see a ton of that. But if you catch it early, you can actually reverse it. And so for the last 6 months or so, I've been putting a lot of young patients on methylated B complex and benfotiamine as well as the krill oil. And just as an experiment, it helps a lot of their anxiety and their ADD and this irritable, friable brain that makes them jumpy and makes them anxious and makes them depressed. It's, you know, it's all a brain that's not processing well. It's not a brain that should be calm. I always use the analogy of a pond, you know, as your brain waves ripple across the pond, it should be just a gentle rhythmic flow of that. And instead, you know, with this ADD and his anxiety, it's like two or three different foci firing at the same time. The brain is irritated and they can't sit still. They can't concentrate on stuff. And it must be a horrible way to live.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It's never stimulated without an off switch.
Yeah, right. It's overstimulated, exactly.
Well, I'm looking at one of your articles about the vagus nerve, which is the parasympathetic system, right? How it calms everything. Is this how thymine works? Does it work on the vagus?
Yes, yes. Okay. So I have a couple of patients with vagal nerve dysfunction, and I put them on thymine. I give them the benfotiamine and the methylated B complex, and not dramatic, but I would say it's definitely a steady improvement. And they're very happy because there's nothing else for them out there.
Wow.
And I think that's the beauty of functional medicine. I mean, I don't know why it's not, it should be the main thrust of medical schools rather than the model that they use. I mean, get back to it. You can get so much benefit from just little things, just by studying how things function. Know your physiology. For example, people with leaky gut syndrome and IBS and all these bowel problems. I mean, two of the things I do right away is I put them on L-glutamine because unlike all the other cells in the body, the cells lining the small intestine don't use glucose, they use L-glutamine. And the cells running the lining the colon use medium-chain triglycerides again. And so I immediately put them on L-glutamine and medium-chain triglycerides, among other things. I have a whole protocol. And you get very nice results from that because right away you're feeding the lining of it. You know, this lining's torn, you have leaky gut, there's holes in there. And that leads to all these adult onset allergies that people have and all this. You know, you see people in their 50s, all of a sudden they have all these food allergies they didn't have before. That's all leaky gut. You know, all this Hashimoto's, all these autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, all of that improves. I'm not saying it completely cures it, but you can get yourselves a lot of breathing space by just healing the gut. High-dose probiotics with it. I use a lot of colostrum. I mean, colostrum is great if you have bowel problems because it's the first milk of a mammal. That's what cows give. That's what humans get. And it's full of antibodies and it's full of soothing things for the gut. And so it's perfect, you know, and this stuff is cheap and it's readily available. I give them collagen, colostrum, all those things at once. And I mix it together and a few drinks and I have them do it. And you don't have to take it all day. But if you do that and you try to also avoid the things that will damage your gut, processed foods and chemical-laden foods, and it can go a long way to But you know, you and I are lone voices in the wilderness. Most people are just ignoring these things and treating it with, you know, steroids and, you know, different things for it. And it doesn't cure it. It just masks it.
Just suppressing the immune response as if, but not getting to the root cause.
Right.
What you just described to me sounds like a way to reverse things like food allergies, and knowing that neurotransmitters for depression, anxiety, you know, reside in the gut. You must be able to get a side benefit from anxiety, depression, and the rest of these mental explosion.
Oh, without a doubt. It, you know, it helps everything. You know, even small things. I put patients on fish oil or krill oil, and they'll say to me, you know, doc, it might be my imagination, but my arthritis is gone. And I say, no, it's not your imagination. It's a strong anti-inflammatory. You know, it's good. You're soothing down. Your joints are inflamed. That's why they're screaming like that. Pain meds aren't helping you. NSAIDs aren't helping you. They're punching holes in your gut and making things worse for other problems. You know, I try not to create more problems than they have, you know, but.
So you must be quite successful in weaning people off of all these meds. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, shopping bags full of medications come in with certain patients. Some of them duplicating, some of them making the situation worse. It must be a pleasure for you to fix the problem and get these things out of their system.
You're absolutely right. The polypharmacy is unbelievable. You know, I've had several patients come in, elderly patients, and they're taking 30 drugs a day. I said to them, I said, look, and you're getting sicker and sicker, obviously. And I said, you know, these drugs are interplaying against each other. You're in a toxic soup all day. You're taking pills. So I said, look, we're going to sit down. This may not work. It could deteriorate. I don't know, you know, don't know you that well. I've been only taking care of you for 6 months, but I truly feel if we could eliminate some of these, and I sit down, I pare it down to 6 drugs, maybe, or 7 drugs, and nothing, they get much better. You know, a lot of it was drug interactions with the polypharmacy and just toxic soup that they were ingesting. It doesn't cure them completely, but certainly it abates the progressive decline that they're undergoing in their health, and kind of, you know, gives me some breathing room for a while.
Well, what you just said, I mean, that whole thinking about it outside the box and using these things like the fats, the medium chain triglycerides, all these things that are just natural. There's no toxicity to medium chain triglyceride, nothing to thiamine. But if we can, and I just want to commend you on staying the course and being that voice in the wilderness, and your patients are blessed to have you, frankly.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to take some of the stuff that you just talked about and add it to my practice because it's so powerful. And, you know, time goes way too quickly, and we're just like scratching the surface, I feel. Yeah. But in the minute that we have left, how can people read your Substack? I don't know if you're seeing new patients. I don't know if you see patients outside of Connecticut, but how can people interact with you and buy your books?
All my books are available on Amazon. My first book, The Doomsday Book of Medicine, is 900 pages of self-care, basically, as a prepping book, but it's for everything from improving your soil for your health and treating everything, anything you can imagine without pharmaceuticals. And I give them 15 or 20 ways to do it, not just one. My second book is pretty similar to the first, The Bible of Alternative Medicine, less of a prepping outlook, more of a just alternative medicine. My third book, Infected Secrets of the Medical Underground, is how to treat any infection from head to toe without pharmaceuticals. And I've had patients call me from all over the world who had tried all kinds of antibiotics and, you know, nothing's worked. And they followed my protocols and just much better. But like you alluded to a minute ago, all my treatments have beneficial side effects. Very few of them have any side effects to what they are, other than maybe a little diarrhea or something, or you know, a rash for someone who's allergic to it. But other than that, and so why not use those rather than pharmaceuticals? Why not use things your body needs? You know, the body has receptors for, and your body recognizes. And so that's why I always try to teach people about that stuff. My Substack page is probably the best place to go, under Medical Underground at Substack.com. Just punch in that. And every week you'll get articles in the mail, and you could scroll through the archives and look back up things. So if you have a problem with, you know, anything at all, hydration or fever, and basic things like that, like patients have no idea that fever is good. You know, and I try to explain that to them. They always take in Tylenol right away, get that fever down. I said, look, the bugs that infect us can only do so because they live at 98.6. You know, they're bugs that cannot live at 101. Your body doesn't do anything randomly. You know, fever didn't just happen. It's not made just to make you uncomfortable. It's made to cook those invaders alive. And so I said to him, you're lowering your temperature. All you're doing is prolonging your infection. You're taking away your body's greatest defense against the infection. Let that fever burn unless it goes, you know, above 102 or 103 and you're really uncomfortable. Then you can lower it a little bit. But prior to that, let it burn, you know, and little things like that. We should be universal concepts that patients know about, but they don't. And they're craving that kind of information. There's a lack of it out there, and they really want it. They, you know, it's well received by most of them and appreciated.
I'm sure it is. You know, it's been too long since I last had our conversation with each other, and I want to do it again. So I'd love for you to come back because we really just scratched the surface. There's so much information.
I would love to anytime you want.
Excellent. I look forward to having you back, and thank you for saying that you'll come back. So on that note, let's end the show. And once again, I appreciate everything you do. Keep up the awesome work. And I want to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.